From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There is no way to slice it and dice that we took the L yesterday. I don't just mean Georgia in terms of missing out on five-star linebacker Owen Papo, although we're obviously going to talk a lot about that on the program here today. I mean here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. I made my case yesterday why, despite the mountain of evidence suggesting that Papo would choose Auburn, I thought it was all a smokescreen. I thought ultimately Papo would still choose Georgia. Part of my reasoning was it just didn't make sense to me that an Atlanta TV station would essentially make a commercial for Auburn football in the middle of the evening. I just didn't seem logical to me, but that was the choice that was made. That's what happens. You move on. Owen Papo, the five-star linebacker, does choose, at least for now anyway, the Auburn Tigers. We will deal with that. We will address that and kind of figure out where Georgia goes from here. And, you know, I was really proud of the coverage we were able to provide last night on SEC Country, bringing the decision of Papo and his grace and teammates to you live last night on a special edition of SEC Country Live. I thought the team we had working on it, both there at the sports bar in Atlanta and our folks here at our SEC Country World Headquarters and Dog Nation World Headquarters studios, I thought everybody did a great job. And I thought we learned a lot about the Papo decision and sort of, you know, what it meant leading up to it, what it means going forward. I thought we learned a lot about that from our broadcast last night, including from Papo in his own words, talking about what it was about Auburn that made him choose that school instead of the Georgia Bulldogs. Here is Papo after his commitment decision announcement to Auburn, explaining why it was that he chose the Tigers.
Auburn, man, that's just a place where I'm really comfortable at. My family loves it over there. And, you know, they losing a whole bunch of seniors this year, too. So I saw the opportunity for me to come in and make an impact early.
How about that there at the end? Losing a whole bunch of seniors, saw a chance for me to come in there and make a big impact early. Obviously, the insinuation here is, you know, Georgia made big strides with its class of 2018 in terms of who it brought in as linebackers. Guys like Quay Walker and Channing Tindall, among the best in the country, really at any position, certainly among the best in the country at linebackers, in roles at least similar to what Papo might provide for Georgia. You know, those two guys provide that for the class of 2018, which is to say nothing of a guy like Monty Rice, who's already on the Georgia roster, and even in Papo's class of 2019, guys like Tresman Marshall, who are already a part of the Georgia class. It's obviously a deep crop of linebackers, and Papo says, hey, with what Auburn's losing, maybe a chance to sort of slide in there and maybe make that an earlier impact right away. However, you know, I don't want to miscast Papo here, because I know there's going to be some online chatter, a lot of message board stuff of, oh, well, he chose Auburn because there's less competition. Oh, he chose Auburn because he doesn't want the intense competition that would be required to get on the playing field at Georgia. I understand why that narrative comes from. You can even sort of construe that from what Papo himself said with his own words there. I do think it would be somewhat unfair to hang that on him. I mean, let's not act like Papo's not an elite competitor. I mean, he's proven that at these, you know, Nike opening qualifier events 3 years in a row, highest recorded Spark score of all time. I mean, this is a guy with the athleticism, I think, to compete against anyone. And ultimately, if you're a Georgia fan who still wants him as a part of the 2019 class eventually, and I think you should, then I think that you should not unfairly cast him as someone who does not want to compete. In fact, later on, when he was talking to reporters, Papo himself even said something that somewhat contradicted what he just explained there, that, you know, he likes Auburn because it's sort of a clearer path to playing time. Even in his own words, he somewhat contradicts that with some later statements. Take a listen.
Don't get me wrong. Like, everywhere you go, you're going to have to compete. Like, I know Georgia brought in a lot of good linebackers. It don't have nothing to do with them being over there. It's just, I see they have a whole bunch of seniors leaving, so my opportunity over there will be better than it would be at Georgia. But my recruitment's not over yet. You know, signing day not till December, so that's just this is what I'm feeling right now.
So no matter how you feel about how Papo happens to feel about the level of competition at Georgia compared to Auburn, obviously Georgia's a much deeper roster right now. No matter how you feel about that and how you compare and contrast those two slightly different statements from Papo on that issue, what's really important here at the end is what Papo drops in there, that, hey, my recruitment's not over. You know, it's a long time until December. And that's really what I think the Georgia fans ought to be hanging their hat on when it comes to this Papo decision. This is the decision that's made for now, but the door, at least based on what he just says there, is clearly open in terms of more recruitment, and it's the kind of recruitment that I think that Georgia wants to be in on, and I think Papo is the kind of player that Georgia would eventually like to have. And yes, it does sting and smart that he chose Auburn last night, but there is still, a reason why Papo got so much attention leading up to this decision, and why, you know, he's going to get, I think, still so much attention even after this decision in terms of the impact that he could make for Georgia. And, you know, I've kind of gone round and round about this off-air over the last 12 hours or so with a lot of Georgia fans, and I guess I'll bring some of that same conversation on the air here too. What makes Papo important here is not that Georgia needs him. You know, Georgia, you know, just by the sort of measurement and examination of the roster, maybe Georgia doesn't need him all that much. Maybe Channing Tindall is going to be better than Owen Papo will be in college. You know, maybe, you know, Monty Rice may grow into something as a player that makes you even forget who Owen Papo is. We don't know what the future is going to hold for really any of those guys. We don't know how that's going to play out. This is not one of those things where we've seen the future and know that Papo is clearly the best of all these linebacker prospects. What this ultimately comes down to is, and I say this all the time, and I think it's worth repeating here, that much like in the NFL draft, we talk about best player available. You know, when it's your turn to pick, you know, you don't take the guy necessarily you need the most. You take the best player that's available because that's how you build the overall most talented roster. I think sometimes recruiting can work out the same way. You know, Papo is not Georgia's biggest need in 2019. Andrew Booth probably represents a higher need. Trayvon Walker represents a higher need. But, y'all, Owen Papo is like 45 minutes down the road. When you got a five-star player that's less than an hour drive from your campus, that's a recruitment you're supposed to win. And it's a recruitment that Georgia might eventually win. But let's not let anybody, be it on a podcast like this or a streaming video show like this or on a message board or on Twitter or anything else, sort of change the narrative of, well, that's okay, Georgia didn't really need him anyway. It's not about what Georgia needs. It's about what Georgia, you know, wants, and Georgia wants five-star players in an hour drive from its campus. And by the way, if you want to compete with the roster that Alabama has built and is still building, momentum growing for them for the class of 2019, you got to collect every five-star player that you can, whether they're positions of need or not. That's why Papo is important. But ultimately, this does come down to a recruitment that's going to be ongoing. And I loved, and if you're a Georgia fan, I think you'll love as well, I absolutely loved what the Georgia coaches apparently told Papo when he told them he was going to Auburn. I think it sets us up for a very interesting next couple of months. Papo was gracious enough to let us in on that conversation. Here's what he said last night.
They said, we still going to recruit you. So they're not really worried about that.
Don't you love that there in the end? Obviously, we know the Georgia coaches are still going to recruit out Owen Papo. But I love his description of they're not really worried about that. And I guess that's probably a great way to at least end this portion of the conversation. If the Georgia coaches aren't that worried about this right now, and in Owen Papo's own words, they're not, then I'm not sure that Georgia fans should be either. Not because Georgia doesn't need Owen Papo. I made my case a moment ago for why I think that he still represents a need, an important addition to this 2019 class because of the geography and because of the nature of who you're competing with, Alabama. But it sounds like the Georgia coaches still have some confidence. After all, we all remember, and there's been so much online about this the last 24 hours, about where Brenton Cox was this time a year ago, where Adam Anderson was this time a year ago, where Justin Fields was this time a year ago. On and on you go, Otis Reese and you know virtually everybody else. A lot of those big-time members of Georgia 2018 class, this time 12 months ago, we all thought they were heading somewhere else. Right now it looks like Owen Papo is heading somewhere else, but things have a way of changing with Georgia before December. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we are glad that you are with us. No matter how you may get to us, whether it be on video, Dog Nation Facebook page at 10 a.m., Dog Nation YouTube page, 10 a.m., also available on the Dog Nation Twitter page at 10 a.m. We're just glad you watch the show or listen to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref or on the podcast, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, SoundCloud, the worldfamousdognation.com. Really glad to have you with us, and of course, as I said, we are brought to you by Marco's Pizza. And, you know, right now a lot of folks watching a lot of basketball. When you watch basketball, you want to get that pizza, you know, in front of the TV there and settle in and enjoy that. Well, you know, Marco's Pizza is a slam dunk with dough made fresh, an original sauce recipe, and three signature cheeses. Every pizza is made primo. Every store, every day, the Italian way. Order yours today from Marcos.com. I told you I had some Marcos this week while my family watched some basketball, and boy, it was sure enough good. Now, if you're listening to the show on podcast and radio, I need to apologize to you for one quick reason here. And my buddy Hannah, who runs our show from the video side of things, already kind of had some fun with this today. If you'll notice to my right, for those of you watching on video, and if you're listening in, I'm going to have to describe this the best I possibly can. I have a box sitting next to me, and on the front of the box, it says, coming up, big surprise. In about, I guess, about 25 minutes from right now, I guess, I'm going to open this box live on the air. And I am pretty sure every single one of you are going to really like what's inside this box, especially coming on the heels of what happened yesterday. If you're kind of smarting about that, if you've got some people in your life who are making this a little bit tough for you, I believe this box is going to make you feel a lot better. And we'll do that coming up, like I said, about 25 minutes from right now. We'll also say hello to Mike Johnson here in a couple of minutes, too. It's going to be a busy edition of Dog Nation Daily. Let me do a little bit more of the Owen Pappo stuff here for a moment. I thought one of the most intriguing things that happened yesterday in the aftermath of Pappo's decision to choose Auburn was a question from Jeff Sintel to Owen when Owen met with reporters. You know, Owen Pappo had told Dog Nation going back a couple of weeks ago that, you know, one of the things he was going to be examining for the school that he ultimately chose is his phrase, "I want to play with some dogs." Now, for those of you who are like me, you know, 41-year-old white guy, sometimes stuff like that maybe doesn't make the most sense. What he means by that is he wants to play with the most talented roster he can be a part of. And how is that coming together there at Auburn? Is he going to get a chance to play with some dogs there at Auburn? I thought Jeff asked a good question, and Owen gave an interesting answer. Take a listen.
You know, you talked about dogs. Dogs was the reason why you would want to go to Auburn.
Yeah.
Are they getting the dogs you want to play with, or what if they don't get those dogs?
The Owen Pappo recruiting trail starts today. You know that.
Who are you going after?
Y'all going to see. Y'all going to see. Just I got a couple people in mind.
One target. Who's one target?
One target? Oh, I'm going to get YA to flip. I'm going to say that. I'm going to get YA to flip. That's my number one target.
Number one target.
That's my number one target.
So interesting question from Jeff, interesting answer from Owen Pappo there that in terms of the dogs he's going to play with at Auburn, he's sort of taking that on as responsibility himself to bring some of those guys in. He mentions Wanya Morris, who for whatever reason is not really on Georgia's radar from a recruiting standpoint right now. Jalen Simpson, the recent Auburn commit, also not really connected to Georgia all that much. Deshaun Sheffield, a likely upcoming Auburn commit, once again, not really on the Georgia radar for kind of whatever reason here. So if Owen Pappo's own standard for who he wants to play with are the quote-unquote the dogs, the elite players, hard to imagine that even with Pappo, the Auburn class can eventually rank alongside the Georgia class here. It would seem that Auburn's class due to be inferior even if it includes the five-star linebacker Owen Pappo. Ultimately, that's why I have the confidence that eventually Pappo is going to be a part of the Georgia 2019 class here, because if it is truly the case that Pappo wants to play with dogs, do we really see those dogs emerging with this Auburn class? Maybe an Auburn fan would tell you differently. For me, it seems unlikely. However, it's also fair to point out here that when Jeff Sintel joined us for our broadcast last night after Pappo had made his announcement, while I just sort of opened the door for it to eventually dissolve and come back in the direction of Georgia, Jeff Sintel says, "I'm not quite so sure that's going to be the case."
I think it's pretty firm. I think he's been waiting for quite a long time to make this commitment. He's already got some guys he's going to go after and target for Auburn. He says he's very solid. I even asked him the question, what happens if, for example, probably the linchpin of his commitment and focus on Auburn was linebackers coach Travis Williams. If something happens to him, he didn't even want to really entertain that question naturally. He says right now he's really solid to Auburn. He sees himself playing there faster. He said, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with competition. He just knows Georgia signed a lot of linebackers that would be in his ways, and he thinks he could come in right away as a freshman and make a very big impact with Auburn.
One of the names you hear Jeff Sintel mention there is Travis Williams, the linebackers coach for Auburn. And obviously, in these intense SEC recruiting wars, sometimes you do have to just sort of shake your opponent's hand. And in this case, this may be an instance, at least for now, where Georgia is sort of forced to shake the hand of Travis Williams and say, hey, you did a good job with this recruitment. Apparently, the relationship that Pappo built with Williams, the linebackers coach there at Auburn, was a strong one, one in which Pappo felt a real extreme sense of loyalty to him. Obviously, a lot of these position coaches, much like the ones at Georgia who've made such big inroads with recruits, Auburn's trying to do the same thing here. And along those lines, Ben Wolk, who covers Auburn recruiting for SEC Country, says it really isn't an example here of Georgia having done anything wrong in regards to Pappo. Maybe this is just credit to Travis Williams and the Auburn staff for what they did right.
I think that Auburn did a really stand-up job here. I mean, I don't think Georgia did anything wrong. I mean, I think that Georgia would have been a great choice. I think that they had a lot of things going in their favor for Owen Pappo, but I just think that Auburn sort of snuck in there, and Auburn, no one was really expecting them to do anything in this one, and Travis Williams, you know, he played a key role and really handled this recruitment. I think it helped Auburn that Travis Williams is the Gwinnett County area recruiter, and he's also the linebackers coach. And so that's why they were able to sort of have a guy that was in on the Grayson guys early on, but also is going to coach Owen Pepo at the next level. And so I think this is a credit to what Auburn was able to do because, you know, 3 months ago, I don't really think that anybody would have expected this to be the choice.
I mean, listen, the bottom line here is this is familiar ground for Georgia to travel upon, although we didn't see this a lot in 2018. For the most part in 2018, Georgia steamrolled its recruiting competition, even Alabama, certainly steamrolled Auburn in terms of the in-state products here for the state of Georgia. But Auburn does have a history of recruiting this state well. Georgia doesn't have a great history at Grayson High School. Those two storylines converge here with the Owen Pepo recruitment, but it seems like this one's far from done, and it seems like Pepo may be a name we're talking about here on our program for quite some time to come. Good to have you with us here today, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. For more on this subject and a whole lot more, let's say hello to Mike Johnson right now. And I hope you watch us 3 p.m. Eastern time every Monday through Thursday on the SEC Country video channels. It is Mike Johnson who joins me there for SEC Country Live. I enjoyed being with him last night for our SEC Country Live coverage, what we called the Grayson Four, Owen Pepo and three of his Grayson teammates as they made their college choices. Mike, I had a lot of fun on that last night, even though it didn't go the way that a lot of this audience wanted to see things go with Owen Pepo. Kind of fun to be able to bring live recruiting coverage there. Nothing like talking some real football and some real significant football storylines in the early portion of May, right?
Yeah, I mean, as you alluded to last night, this is a change for me personally in terms of how closely you watch these recruits and how you try to really look at the trajectory of what their career might be in the end. It has been fun to really dive deeper into recruiting here over the last year plus with you, and I think last night was a great example of that. I mean, the Grayson Four, I mean, think about the fact that they've got four kids last night, Texas, Tennessee, Alabama, and Auburn. I mean, it really is just an incredible story coming out of that high school. And so following those kids, following their career trajectories, listening to Owen Pepo say he's going to try to get Wanya Morris on board down there at Auburn, it was an intriguing night last night to be able to watch those guys really grow into their decisions.
So let me get a thought from you on Owen Pepo. This is a linebacker that you've studied well, and you certainly know his game well. You also were kind of in on the storyline of his decision. What's your reaction to the choice that he made last night, and where do you think things go from here?
Now, I think this is interesting for a lot of different reasons, and I think as it pertains to Georgia, and Alabama has dealt with this for some time. You know, you and I talked about this the other day in terms of Auburn and Gus Malzahn and how he recruits. I alluded to a story from Harold Joyner out of last year's class that, you know, he said, why would you go to Alabama? There's four or five different running backs in front of you. You heard the same thing kind of a little bit out of Owen Pepo last night, didn't you? I think it's really kind of an insight into Gus Malzahn and some recruiting tactics that they're using down there at Auburn. And I don't blame them for it. I mean, a lot of what he was saying is definitely true. They signed a lot of linebackers to Georgia last year. There's a ton of depth and a ton of talent sitting in front of him. And the path to get on the field is much clearer at Auburn right now than it would be at Georgia. It's just the nature of the beast when you have a talented program like Georgia does right now. But I think my main takeaway from it was, you know, I don't think this is a trend in either direction. I don't know if this is a trend long-term for Auburn. I don't think this is a trend long-term for Georgia. I don't think there's anything to be concerned about. I think this was one guy, one talented player that decided, you know what, I feel comfortable down at Auburn. I'm more comfortable with what's going on in their program right now in terms of finding playing time. And so that was my biggest takeaway, what he was sold on Auburn about, what he was not sold on Georgia about, and the fact that I don't think this is going to be anything more than a mere hiccup for Georgia. I know they're going to, you know, continue to recruit Owen Pepo, but right now it just looks like nothing more than a hiccup for them, and I'm sure they'll continue to travel down that path.
There's a joke that a lot of Georgia fans sort of tell each other, and it goes back to this time a year ago. If you ever go to the forum at forum.dognation.com, you see this thread kind of resurface from time to time. It's the what's wrong with Georgia recruiting. And, Mike, a year ago at this time, Georgia recruiting was in, I mean, frankly, pretty lousy shape. But believe it or not, Georgia was ranked, like, outside the top 70 in recruiting. And some of the guys that were getting Georgia offers were head-scratchers. A lot of the guys that were turning down Georgia and choosing other schools was really, I think, striking a lot of panic among a lot of Georgia fans. And it seems ridiculous to sort of look back on that now, given where Georgia finished the recruiting cycle for 2018. But at the time, it seemed real. And you just touched on something that was really crucial to me at that time a year ago, because I was probably one of the guys who was sort of a little bit concerned and kind of turning my head sideways, wondering, you know, what is wrong with Georgia recruiting here? Because it seemed like for the 2017 class for Georgia, which, you know, finished number three in the country, Kirby had a big-time advantage over a lot of schools because he could sell that early playing time. And for 2018, the question was, what do you sell when you don't have early playing time to sell anymore? Well, as it turns out, Georgia still had plenty to sell, and it won a lot of big-time recruiting battles. But the Papo story is significant here beyond just Papo in that this is what Alabama's been doing for a while, and if Georgia wants to win national championships, this is what it also has to do, which is sell guys on coming in to contribute to depth and not come in and be a superstar right away. You know, Wanya Morris, you know, with all due respect, can go to a place like Tennessee and think of himself as potentially a freshman starter because that's how much Tennessee needs help. Georgia doesn't need that much help, but it still needs Alabama-style depth, and that kind of recruitment's just really hard to do.
It definitely is. You have to circle back around to a word I use all the time that goes hand-in-hand with recruitment, BA, and that's development. You have to sell development. And, you know, I'm not going to come on your show and toot Alabama's horn, but I saw a stat earlier today. If you're a five-star prospect that went to Bama, you have a 48% chance of being drafted in the first round. A 48% chance of being drafted in the first round if you're a five-star that went to Alabama. If you went somewhere else, those numbers are down to 17%. And I think that that's the trajectory that Georgia is heading to. I think that's what Kirby Smart is looking for. I think you've got to continue to see these guys go in the first round and see these draft picks. The trend started this year, and I think you've done all you can do if you're Kirby Smart to start to develop that trend of we are good at developing players and sending them to the NFL. And that's what Nick Saban has been able to establish. That's what Kirby Smart's going to continue to try to establish, and you have to keep making that impressions on players. You have to have the jerseys hung up. You have to have, hey, you know, Roquan is this. He's a Butkus Award winner. You have to have that development if you can't sell guys an early playing time. That's just the nature of the beast in terms of recruiting right now, and I know that's what the target is for them.
So before we change the subject to something else, give me a couple thoughts here on the other two SEC guys we saw commit last night, both from Grayson, Kevin Harris to Alabama, Wanya Morris to Tennessee. You know, for me, Morris going to Tennessee, I think, puts pressure on Florida. At some point in time, Mullen's got to pull the same caliber of players that we've seen a couple of times, Jeremy Pruitt be able to pull at Tennessee. He seems to have, at least in my mind, a bit of a leg up in terms of attracting attention from elite recruits at Tennessee compared to Mullen at Florida. And for Alabama here, a chance to get into the state of Georgia with a guy like Kevin Harris, who looks to himself be a pretty good prospect here.
Yeah, I think they're both going to be incredibly good players. I mentioned last night, I mean, both these guys are high-end, four-star type guys, particularly Wanya Morris. I mean, he looked like, watching his film, he looks like a guy who can step into an offensive tackle role right now. I mean, he's 6'6", 293. We mentioned it last night. He's got the length. He's got the base. He's going to be a good player for Tennessee. I think what was significant really about his words was, you know, I want to be a cornerstone. I want to be a face of the class. I want to go to a program where I can do something different. And boy, that's got to sound good to Tennessee fans, and I'm with you. I think that you start to look at people that are in those same kind of positions right now around the SEC. I think that puts a lot of pressure on Dan Mullen down in Florida to start some of these recruiting halls, to start getting some of these bigger names. You've seen a lot of guys that are kind of connected to the Florida program. You've seen a lot of guys that are, you know, unofficial, you know, or official visits or showing up in spring game. You got to start landing some of those guys. Tennessee took a step in that direction last night with Wanya Morris and really turning the tides of what has been the recruiting in recent years. Dan Mullen's got to start doing some of the same things.
So we haven't spoken to you since the NFL draft. We saw six Georgia players get taken, three in the first round. Any thoughts from you on kind of the fits for these guys? Roquan to Chicago in the top 10. Patriots getting a couple dogs in the first round. Isaiah Wynn, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb apparently going to be a big part of the rebuild there in Cleveland as a second-round running back. Even Lorenzo Carter is a third-round pick to our buddy Michael's Giants, who works on the show with us every single day. What'd you think about where these Georgia guys go in the draft?
Boy, I love that Isaiah Wynn pick. I really do. You know, when I was coming out in the draft, obviously I was very blessed to go to the Falcons, but the Patriots are one of those places where you go and you feel like it's such a blessing to be able to land there. They're going to turn him into such a good prospect. I know that, you know, that Georgia has seen them turn other offensive line prospects into great players up there in New England. So I think Isaiah Wynn's just the latest in that. I think he had a great Senior Bowl. I really love what his film looks like from last year. And you love the base, you love the quickness, you love really what he's able to do with his upper body strength, and I think that's such a good home for him up in New England. I think he's going to turn into a Pro Bowl caliber type of player. I also love, you know, the Roquan Chicago deal.
Time out. I got to interrupt you for 1 second. So I ask you about six guys. Is it any surprise to anybody that the biggest offensive line homer in the world gives me a 10-minute dissertation and I say went to New England? You are the most predictable guy on the planet, Mike Johnson.
Hey, listen, man, those the big guys are what makes things stick. You ask Tom Brady who he's excited about, I guarantee he says Isaiah Wynn. That's just the bottom line for a lot of these guys. And, but going back to Roquan and starting to capitalize on what he was doing, I thought it was interesting that Roquan landed in Chicago, because you and I talk a lot about really the genesis of the middle linebacker position, really some of these speedy guys playing in that middle that can really go sideline to sideline and make a lot of tackles. And one of those names that comes to mind way before his time is a Brian Urlacher, a guy who played safety, returned kicks in college, had that type of speed, bringing him in to play that middle linebacker position. And there you got, you know, a Hall of Fame player and Brian Urlacher patrolling the middle. That's what I think Roquan, the exciting thing about Roquan and that Chicago Bears jersey, the long lineage of great linebackers going all the way back to a Mike Singletary that they've had up in Chicago. I think he fits well with what the new age caliber of linebacker is going to be, and I think it's awesome to see Chicago going in that direction.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And, you know, on the flip side of things, you had a couple Georgia guys who did not get drafted that I think probably stung them pretty badly here. Trent Thompson leaves school early. He's an undrafted free agent now. Davin Bellamy does not get drafted, ends up getting picked up as an undrafted free agent by the Houston Texans here. And, you know, you were a guy that did get drafted, but you certainly understand the mindset of having to go in there and, you know, work hard and make an NFL team, which you did. Being at camp and seeing other, I guess what you call the UDAs come in, the undrafted free UDFAs, the undrafted free agents coming in here, how do they adapt to this? What's the mindset for a Thompson? What's the mindset for Davin Bellamy? Even a guy like our buddy Jeb Blazevich, who just announced yesterday that he's going to go to Seattle's camp as an undrafted free agent. How do you approach that with the hopes of making a team here?
You got to keep your head down. You have to be workmanlike. You have to fit into the locker room culture. I think that's what gets overlooked a lot of times. And I've mentioned this to you before. I think when you're not a guy that's been in some of those circles, you know, people look at it and say, hey, don't go in there and make friends. Don't go in there and, you know, make sure you have a chip on your shoulder. Make sure, you know, that's not always how it works in football circles. You have to fit into a culture. You have to fit into really what a lot of these guys are trying to do. You don't want to go in there and make a ton of enemies right off the bat. And I think there has to be a fine line. You have to be hungry. You do have to play with a chip on your shoulder on the field, particularly when you get in those preseason games. But it's an uphill battle. You know, keep your head down. Do what's asked of you from some of the veteran players. Do what's asked of you of all the coaches. Make sure you are up underneath the special teams coach. The special teams coach really is your path to getting on the field. You know, when I was with the Falcons, there's such a funny story from Keith Armstrong, who's the special teams coach. And he had some guys come in there, and, you know, he'd always ask me, he'd say, hey, what position do you play? Hey, I played wide receiver. No, you don't. Julio Jones plays wide receiver. Roddy White plays wide receiver. You are a gunner on the punt team. You play L5 on the kickoff team. That's what you play. And so I think that's such a big ordeal when you're talking about these free agents coming in. Make sure you're keeping your head down and doing everything you can. The more you can do, right? I mean, the more you can do, I say it all the time, the more you can do, the better chances you have of making that team. And I think that's what you have to look at in their situation.
You know what does a good job of kind of highlighting what you just described for those of us who may have watched Hard Knocks and HBO before, and Keith Armstrong, the Falcons special teams coach, was once profiled in a season of Hard Knocks. We saw some of that on camera from him. And when you watch that show, you really get a sense for how hard it is for, you know, the later round draft picks, the undrafted free agents, going out there and impressing a special teams coach, making a name for yourself during the preseason, being on a roster. Boy, it's a tough job to do, because everybody that's trying to do the same thing you're doing was also a good player in college, right?
Oh, listen, it's so tough. And you know, my good buddy Ricardo Allen, he's a safety for the Falcons right now, came from Purdue. He was a cornerback. Guess what? They said, hey, man, can you play safety? Well, you know, I've always been a cornerback. Of course I can play safety. I can go out there and be a gunner. And now he's making $5 million a year as the Falcons starting safety. And so, like I said, you have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to get up under those special teams coaches and understand what they need. And you have to make sure you fit into that locker room culture. And I know that's what all those guys you named are going to be trying to do here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me squeeze in one more final question before we get ready to get out of here. Alex Martin-Smith, who is a terrific writer on our team of websites here, had some interesting quotes from Nick Chubb the other day, where Chubb talked about the differences between, you know, the Kirby Smart-led Georgia team and the Mark Richt-led Georgia teams. He obviously has great respect for Richt and praised him in this interview, but talked about how the seniors, the upperclassmen, had kind of gotten tired of losing and that it really became more of a player-led team with Kirby Smart as the head coach. I can only assume that that transformation must have been similar for you at Alabama because Smart obviously learned from Saban. When Nick Chubb talks about a player-led team, what does he mean by that?
Yeah, there definitely is a difference. And I think the great teams that you see are led by the players. And what he means is they're holding everybody accountable. Hey, you know, when you don't show up to, you know, an optional workout on a Sunday, who's making that phone call to that guy to hold him accountable? Is that the strength coach? Is it his position coach? Or is that somebody else in his meeting room? Is that somebody else on his defense? Is that somebody else on that offense? Are you, you know, are the players the ones holding each other accountable? That's such a big deal, really. I think that's when programs start to hit the next step. And you know, I mentioned to you before, I think that Nick Saban has done a great job of cultivating leadership. I think that's one of the underrated aspects. And I know Kirby Smart has seen it firsthand. You put guys in a position to become leaders. You just don't turn your shoulder and think, okay, the leaders will rise to the top. You put players in a position to hold each other accountable. You put players in a position to say, okay, you've got these five guys. Okay, you've got these 10 guys. Let's make sure there's accountability factor. And Kirby Smart obviously, you know, has a knack for doing that. I think that when you start to get the Roquans calling out the Natrez Patricks of the world or however things were going last year at Georgia, that's when these teams begin to flourish. That's when you start to develop the leadership because then the guys behind them, the next guy in line, starts to understand that they have to fill that void too, that they have to fill that role and they have to start holding guys accountable for years to come. And it starts to flow and it starts to really roll downhill. And so I think that's an important factor for that program moving forward for sure.
Mike Johnson, always fun. 3 p.m. Eastern time this afternoon. We'll see you for SEC Country Live. Thanks for being a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza today.
All right, buddy. See you this afternoon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, if you're watching on video, if you're just joining us, you see this box to my right. If you're listening to the podcast or listening to the radio show, once again, I apologize for the slightly more visual medium on this today, but I have a box. It says coming up, big surprise. I'll move Eddie kind of out of the way here so you can see it better. Coming up, big surprise. In 5 minutes, I will open this box live on the air, and I'm pretty sure everyone's going to like it, and I'm pretty sure if you're not in a great mood about yesterday, you're going to be in a much better mood when I open this box 5 minutes from right now. Before we get to that, though, let's do our SEC through. Of course, as I just mentioned with Mike Johnson, SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. Eastern time. On the SEC Country video channels Monday through Thursday, that includes today. We'll be back at it again this afternoon. I am really excited about that. One of the things we talked about yesterday, and, you know, I say it a lot, I like this time of year because I like predictions. I like what a lot of people somewhat snarkily call hot takes. I like all that kind of stuff. Here's who's going to win the East. Here's who's going to win the West. Here's who's going to be good. Here's who's not. I just enjoy this kind of stuff. And one of the guys jumping into the fray on this is Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports, who's, I guess, been covering college football since they were wearing leather helmets. He gives us an idea of the SEC teams that he has in his top 25, top 25 overall. He's got Bama 1, Georgia 3, Auburn 10, Mississippi State 11, A&M 21, Florida 22, and LSU 25 in his sort of post-spring preseason top 25. And for me, this is a pretty ridiculous ranking, at least in comparison down at the bottom here. You know, he's got LSU, Florida both in the top 25 over, say, a team like South Carolina. That's sort of hard for me to reconcile given what I think South Carolina has in comparison to the Gators and the Tigers here. This feels like one of those things where we've just been ranking Florida and LSU for so many years that they're sort of automatically penciled in for an upcoming year when I don't think that Florida has a dynamic playmaker that rivals what I assume is going to be a healthy Deebo Samuel for the Gamecocks. Do Gators or LSU have a team at have a quarterback that's going to be better than what Jake Bentley brings to the table for the Gamecocks? You know, A&M at 21, I can debate you on that. They play a tough schedule, which makes it hard. But I certainly see, I think that Jimbo Fisher is eventually going to build something big there. But ranking the Florida or LSU ahead of South Carolina, to me, just does not make a lot of sense. Georgia at 3, I guess that feels about right. I do think that Georgia's right back in that conversation for the college football playoff again in 2018. Sounds like Dennis Dodd agrees. So from that standpoint, I guess we're all kind of on the same page about that. Something else I wanted to mention here for our SEC through, and this has an SEC tied to it as well, Bovada, which is one of those online sports books that provides betting odds, they have updated, or I guess released for the first time here, their odds for NFL Rookie of the Year. The favorite to win the award, once again, our buddy Michael, a producer, is a big New York Giants fan. The favorite to win the award, you'll be happy to know, is the former Penn State running back Saquon Barkley. He's about 2-1 to win the, or actually about 1.5-1 to win the Rookie of the Year. So big bet here on Barkley, at least from Bovada. You've got Georgia's Sony Michel at 30-1 to win the Rookie of the Year coming out of the New England Patriots. If you're a Falcons fan, you'll be interested that Calvin Ridley is 40-1 to win Rookie of the Year, courtesy of Bovada. And then Darius Geis, actually, even though he fell out of the first round, 18-1 to win the Rookie of the Year for the Washington Redskins. I guess Bovada thinking the guy is going to get leaned on a lot there by the Redskins, get a lot of carries. Could I see, you know, so there was so much pre-draft comparison between Sony Michel and last year's Rookie of the Year on the offensive side of the ball, Alvin Kamara, because of the versatility they showed in the SEC. Now, Georgia used Michel a lot better than Tennessee, which was Kamara's last team, a lot better than they ever used him. But I understand that comparison, and Kamara obviously went on to a fantastic rookie season. Could I see Michel doing something like that for the New England Patriots? I guess I probably could, but I'm going to say once again, as much as I love Sony Michel, y'all watch out for Nick Chubb. I think that he's underrated going into his rookie season here at Cleveland. I think they'll use him. I think they may need to use him. And I could definitely see Nick Chubb sort of rising to the challenge when it comes to that. Final story to get to here for the SEC through. I thought that Jeremy Pruitt had some very interesting comments at one of these Knoxville Touchdown Club type functions. I don't know what the exact civic organization was, but coaches do this kind of stuff a lot. At least some of them do. Kirby Smart doesn't really do them, but a lot of other folks do them. And Pruitt was telling the story about how Philip Fulmer, the AD, made no bones about it to him when he took the job that he'd be judged by Tennessee fans on three games. Georgia, Florida, and Alabama, those three big rivals, how are you going to do against them? That's what's going to really matter for you. And got a big applause line when he said that at the Knoxville function. And I think that makes it interesting here for 2018. Tennessee obviously be a huge underdog to Georgia, a huge underdog to Alabama, but circle that Tennessee-Florida game as a really important game for both teams, and we'll make that your SEC through. So now, as promised here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I told you it's time to open up this box, the box that says the big surprise, and I told you you're going to like this. And I guess let me give you a little bit of backstory before we truly get into all this. Do you remember, and this was cited last night, by the way, when five-star linebacker Owen Papo chose Auburn, as he explained to Jeff Sintel, it was that game in November, being there in Jordan-Hare Stadium when Auburn beat Georgia and the loud crowd response, once again, also for the Iron Bowl, too, that really seemed to impress Papo. And Auburn fans certainly loved that. They were having a great time with that a year ago. And they were sure proud of their coach, Gus Malzahn, who, once the game was over, was strutting around on the field and getting patted on the back and just loving every minute of the moment of beating Georgia in November. It was a convincing Auburn win. There's no doubt about that. But Gus Malzahn had an even more, what, at least in his mind, apt description for it than that. Do you remember when Gus Malzahn said this?
We whipped the dog crap out of this.
Oh, yes. Gus Malzahn, we whipped the dog crap out of Georgia in November. But that wasn't the end of the story. These two teams got together and played again in December in the game that mattered more than any other, right? Because a November regular season game, when you win that, you don't get trophies for that. Well, Auburn, I guess, did give themselves a ring for winning that game, but you're not supposed to get trophies for that. You're not supposed to get a ring for winning a game like that. Auburn did do that, but the one that really mattered, the one in December, that's what Georgia won. And we had a theme that week leading up the SEC championship game. Do you remember when we talked a lot about the idea of the Dog Nation retaliation? And Auburn may have been strutting around after a November win, but the game that was going to matter was the one that's going to be played in December. And we thought, much like Georgia had been on a revenge tour all season long in 2017, we thought the game against Auburn was going to be the culmination of that. Not just revenge against the teams that had beat it in 2016, but the only team to beat Georgia in 2017. We thought Georgia was going to get some retaliation against Gus Malzahn for his dog crap line and against Auburn for having beaten Georgia there. And so we talked about Dog Nation retaliation all week that week. And sure enough, The dog crap line turned out to be a huge motivating force for the Georgia players. Isaac Knott and others talked about that after the game. And Georgia throttled Auburn inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium that day, 28-7, won the SEC, went on to the college football playoff, and the rest, they say, is history. Now, you may be wondering, B, why are you bringing this up today? What does this have to do with anything that's going on right now? Well, I hear from a lot of Georgia fans on a regular basis, and I know what it's like on a week like this when Auburn gets a recruiting win over Georgia. And a lot of these Auburn fans are crowing about this, right? A lot of these Auburn fans are bragging about what they did and see, you know, Auburn's going to, you know, have something for Georgia, and just a lot of trash being talked. And there are a lot of Georgia fans who sort of want that perfect response. And here on this show, which we call Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, we mean that when we say this is a show for the fans. We believe that we got to try to take care of Georgia fans when we can. So inside this box, I have a gift that I'm going to try to give to as many of you as I possibly can as a way of saying to the Auburn fans who want to talk a little trash about a five-star recruit's decision or maybe feel good about themselves because they won the SEC West, we remember who won the real game here. And I'm going to show this off on a camera if I can here. This is our Dog Nation Retaliation T-shirt. And if you see it, it says the state of Georgia. It's got the Atlanta, Georgia, where the game was played. SEC championship won by the Dogs by a final score of 28-7. I had this made just for Georgia fans who are going to be tired of the Auburn fans, who are going to be talking trash to you and saying all the stuff to you about what happened in recruiting in May. Well, much like you know, Auburn won the game in November, but Georgia won the game that really mattered. We think sometimes recruiting has a way of working out the same way, and that's exactly what we think may happen in this story as well. And as a reminder of that, we've got our Dog Nation Retaliation T-shirt. So I'm going to try to give away as many of these as I can. I've got hundreds and hundreds of these that over the course of the summer we're going to give that away. So if you're a Georgia fan and you want one of these to remind those Auburn folks about what really happens between this Deep South's oldest rivalry, you need yourself a Dog Nation Retaliation T-shirt. And if you know someone who really wants one of these, we're not selling them. We're going to give them away. And whether you live in Georgia or somewhere else, we're going to try to find a way to make it as easy as possible to give as many of these away as we can. We're going to do a lot of that over the course of the next few weeks. So I hope you'll join us in the fun when it comes to all of that. So that was our big surprise today, the Dog Nation Retaliation T-shirts, 28-7. Celebrating a big moment for the Georgia Bulldogs. We will do that with you here today and throughout the rest of the summer. That's going to be a lot of fun. Stay tuned as we try to give a lot of those away. And by the way, in the midst of doing that, we don't forget about the other rival for Georgia. Eddie won't let us. Of course, 178 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think they beat the Florida Gators once again. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. We love doing it every single day, and we appreciate Marco's Pizza for helping us make it happen every single day. And really, you know, to kind of sum up sort of the theme of all of this today, Dog Nation Retaliation, kind of everything else, one decision several months before signing day doesn't do anything to dampen our enthusiasm or change what we believe is a lightning-fast trajectory for the Dogs straight to the top. We're going to have fun talking about it, and we'll see you tomorrow.